You're a rich girl, and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway.
Hey, speaking of rich girls, me and the guys here at Graphic Novice wanted to welcome our very own musings of a geek rich girl, Mr. Bob Holt, and his esteemed co-host, Amy, to the wonderful world of podcasting. Over at musingsofageek.com, they've been providing us all with some really great articles, and now it looks like they'll be launching a podcast. Let me tell you, there's only a few things that we really geek out over here at Graphic Novice, and besides comics, you're probably going to hear a lot about the other two of them over at the Culture Babble. You guessed it, soccer and Doctor Who. Love it. Totally stoked. Pound sign excited. So anyway, be sure to keep your eye on the interwebs, because the Culture Babble is going to get ready to smooth up in you sooner than you think. Amy, Bob, have at 'em. Let's get ready to babble about culture. The show is called Culture Babble. That's all I got. End of the promo.
You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Geek, where we discuss geek culture from the belly of the beast once a week, coming to you live from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. And William drove, and William did a very good job driving.
I know.
We were asked by my wife to not let you drive drunk, and we succeeded.
She thought I was just going to start like pounding open bottles.
Apparently, your reputation precedes you.
Wow. No, she's on that. I hope that's not my reputation. Good Lord.
Well,
that was her thing. She pulled Des and I aside this morning before I left. She said, "Make sure that you." That Billy doesn't drive drunk. You have to keep him from driving drunk.
She's more under the impression that we're leaving the El Cortez, which we may not.
Well, if we do, we're going to walk to the rest of downtown.
I think she thinks we're going to drive somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and if we do decide,
with all
we'll,
of the morons in town for the iHeartRadio Festival Radio. And the only slightly less moronic people for the Mr. Olympiad contest, I don't think we'll be leaving.
Yeah, exactly. We'll probably just stay downtown, and if we do decide to go anywhere, we're going to cab it. Because
if we're going to go anywhere, we're going to go to the Mr. Olympiad context and be one of those jackass. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, that's fine. Anyway, how you guys doing today? How was the drive? You guys have a good time on the drive?
Yeah, I mean, like that drive. So would
because you're usually a passenger.
Yeah, I'm usually. I like
five
driving,
hours
though.
Plus the lunch. I'd say 5.5 hours plus the lunch.
Yeah, and that drive is fine for about 2 hours, and then
it starts hitting you. Yeah. I mean,
it's
still
a lot better coming to Vegas than
leaving Vegas. Yes, and we usually stop for lunch at this burger place in Barstow,
Maximum Tom's.
Maybe. Yeah, at Tom's.
Does that sound right?
Something
Tom's Diner. Burgers?
No,
I don't know.
Something like Max Tom's.
I don't have my sound set up, so
all
I can't play Tom's.
All you need to know,
Tom's
folks at home, is that Dan was quite disturbed because he got himself a Greek breakfast burrito, which he thought contained hero. And instead, it contained bacon, ham, sausage, egg, cheese, but the cheese was feta.
And apparently feta cheese makes a normal breakfast burrito a Greek breakfast burrito.
Obviously. Every fool in the world knows this.
Although Amy,
just giving you a side of tzatziki.
I tweeted that out, and Amy said, but it does make it delicious. So Amy from Culture Babble, you're right. It absolutely made it delicious, but not Greek.
I still feel like what was wrong with this place? I love this place because it's... It's like every time I go, regardless of how big a drink I get, I usually end up under $10. There's no tipping a waiter. It's really fast. Dan now has a lot of cups for some reason.
My cup was leaking.
This is what happens when you don't steal cups from the hotel. You buy crappy ones at Walgreens. But my biggest problem was that I would have liked to have had that Greek breakfast burrito, but unfortunately I did not read it.
You didn't read the signs.
Three different specials signs.
You got to read the signs.
That are in three completely different locations in that restaurant.
It's a little confusing.
You got to read the signs. And the one thing I love about coming to the El Cortez is we've already had three interesting weird things.
We've definitely seen some interesting
three,
people
yes.
in an hour.
Two, in an hour.
One.
Yeah, so we're in the elevator. We're in the elevator, and we get in, and a gentleman walks in, and he looked to be about middle age, and but he was dressed like a Boy Scout
with sergeant's yeah. chevrons on his sleeve.
Yeah, yeah, just as a Boy Scout. We get in the elevator, and he gets on after us, and he starts counting down
and
as we're
getting.
He's got a
backpack. A backpack. Yeah,
we start counting down as we're getting down to the casino, and we're looking at each other. 3, 2, 1. The doors open. Launch, and he. Walked out. We're like that was strange. What was the second one?
Well, I'm just really glad that black backpack didn't explode.
Yes,
at that point.
Yes, we survived our terrorist
our first
experience.
Terrorist experience.
The second one, Dan, was we walked back to the hotel, and as we walked to the elevators to go up to the room, there was a gentleman.
Oh, that's right.
Looking at the elevators, who did not seem to realize that there was an elevator sitting in the lobby that you had to hit the up.
You
button.
Have to hit the button.
And then once we hit the up button, the doors open. He immediately proceeded to rush into the elevator. Between me, who opened it, and you two, who were slightly behind me, rather than being a normal human being and letting the whole party enter first and then getting in behind them.
And then when I went and got ice right now, I walked out of the room, and as we were walking back to the room, a Mexican gentleman looked like he was leaving. We came in, dropped our stuff, I got the ice bucket, walked out to get ice, and he's still standing outside of his room. Here comes a houseman, you know, are you 506? And the gentleman says, yeah, fucking smells like ass in there. And it was this weird, like... You left the room because it smelled so bad and waited outside for the houseman to come. And the houseman was done doing whatever he did by the time I got ice and started coming back. So I don't know if whatever he did is actually going to fix it.
Sprayed some.
Yeah, he sprayed. So he had a bottle. He said, oh, no, this works great. This works good.
Okay. You take us to all the classy places, Dan.
Well, we've had problems like this before at the El Cortez.
But we come to the El Cortez because we love it.
No, we do. But let's remember the first time we came to the El Cortez. We had a room that did not know how to be cold.
That's true. Oh, that was rough.
And we had a wonderful engineer come up and fix the problem, but it took 75 minutes or so
exactly.
for him to get there. And at no point did anyone at the front desk ever do anything right. And then El Hotel Man Extraordinaire Dan Zisko goes to the shift manager, GM, assistant GM, whoever's there, walks into his office and prefaces a conversation with, "Now I don't want anything."
Well, I didn't. I didn't want it. I just wanted to let him know.
I wouldn't have minded a steak dinner, Dan.
Okay.
They have a steakhouse here. I've never eaten there because I don't think it's probably worth the money they charge.
I think the steakhouse is closed. I think they're turning it into a better cafe.
Okay. But regardless, back then it was a steakhouse. Mm-hmm. They would have comped us free dinner after all of that.
Oh, I totally agree. So instead of doing a normal Musings of a Geek show this week, because we're in Vegas and I just didn't really feel like bringing up all of my equipment, last week for Questions of the Universe, Michael from Who the What Now asked, how did we all meet? And I thought this was going to be a great time to do the Musings of a Geek secret origin story. How did we meet? How did we get together?
I wasn't aware it was secret.
Well, it's secret
yeah,
origins.
I'm pretty sure we've probably covered it on past podcasts. You should have told them to check the archives.
go back and listen to our show.
I can do the 30-second version.
No,
but
no,
it sounds
no.
like you've got something
There's
more
a
special
whole
planned.
Show. There's a whole show planned around this. Don't fuck me
Dan,
up.
Dan has dates.
I have dates. I have dates.
Case-specific dates by day. I want to hear
you're
this.
Taking notes at home. There's a test at the end.
All right. So, 2007. I married my wife in 2006.
Let's start the story at the beginning.
The world was a simpler place.
July 14th, 1977.
A young Barack Obama.
I'm born.
Hoped to one day.
What? Wait, what? What's that?
That's officially. I'm
oh, the
only
beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, so July 14th, 1977.
Of the story.
Dez is born. And then August 14th, 1978. I was born in a town in New Jersey.
And then I learned to walk.
Yeah.
And then I learned to speak. And then at some point, the grayest one at this table was born. When were you born, Will?
82.
82? You're younger than my wife.
Just barely. Yeah.
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 All right. William's young. Anyway. All right. We're going to go to we're going to skip all of that.
You are aware it's important that he be as young as your wife. Or else your story makes no sense.
My story literally makes no sense if you're not as young as my wife.
Yeah.
All right. Going back to 2007, my wife and I get married in 2006. And in 2007, couple things happen. I was offered the chance to direct The Graduate. It's a play, the play version of The Graduate, which is a combination of the book and the movie. It's a great show. I was directing it, and Rihanna wanted to be in a show, and I cast her as Elaine. And if you know the story of The Graduate, Elaine is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Robinson, and she's the one who runs off with Benjamin in the end. And I cast the show. I think we started in March 9th, 2007, I think would have been the auditions for The Graduate.
Did he really just give like a date?
A date, March 9th, 2007. Date. The story begins on March 9th, 2007, and it's important because everything else that happens after that led us to this moment in this hotel room.
Okay.
Okay. So I audition, and I get this great cast. I get this great kid to play Benjamin, whose name, oddly enough, was Ben. And he was awesome. He and Rihanna had great chemistry on stage. I had a great Mrs. Robinson, a woman by the name of Kaylee McKenna, who is a San Diego Community Theater actress. Jerry Young played Mr. Robinson. He's incredible. This is brilliant cast. Now, Onstage Playhouse, where I did this, has a six, at the time they had a six show season. So basically, every other month was a show, but the shows lasted 6 weeks, so it wasn't quite every other month. And basically what happened is a show would open on Friday, Saturday, Sunday show, and then you'd audition the next show on that Monday, and then you'd rehearse the entire length of the show, 3 weeks of tech and getting things together, and then you'd open. So I auditioned. We went through a week of rehearsal, so we're like in week three, and Benjamin, the kid playing Benjamin, comes to me and says, Dan, I got a part at the Old Globe.
Well, shit.
Well, what are you going to do, right? It's like you could either be at this little dinky Chula Vista Community Theater or...
For those not from here, the Old Globe is much nicer.
Yes, and brings
Speaking
a lot of shows to Broadway's.
Speaking of the only actor Broadway. At this table, you have nothing in this business if you don't honor your commitments.
And he was fully prepared to honor his commitment. He was. He said, I was offered a role, but I'm willing to stay here if you need me. And I told... What am I going to say? I'm like... Go fucking be on stage at the Globe. I'm not going to stand in the way of your career because I, you know, am putting on The Graduate. Now, granted, I've been working on this show for about 2 years. So I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do now? And a friend of our artistic director just happened to be in a show with this other guy, also randomly named Ben, and said, this guy was amazing. You should totally audition him. And
get Ben number two.
And I said, all right, let's get Ben number two. And Ben number two came in the next week. Now we're in 4 weeks into about, I think it amounts to a 9 week rehearsal process. And usually 9 weeks is too much. But now we're in week four. And I'm like, fuck. Okay, so we get Ben. And Ben, Des is going to understand this. Ben gave a great audition. And that was it.
I worked with that actor.
But what does he look like?
No, not him. Mm. The one who comes in and auditions, and he seems really good at audition, and then you realize when you do the show that absolutely nothing has changed since the audition?
Well, that started to become evident really quickly. He had he had to hit the ground running, and I told him this, and he was very, you know, yes, I can do this. I can hit the ground running. Everything's going to be fine. Great. So we went in, and it became very evident very quickly that he was not putting in the work. He was literally showing up to rehearsal. He wasn't spending time learning his lines. And he went through the rehearsal process. It was an extremely frustrating rehearsal process until we get to a week before the show. And we got to a week before the show. And actually, it's Tech Week. It's the Monday of Tech Week. And I call our artistic director, and I basically say to her, I got to get rid of this kid. He hasn't learned his lines. And Kaylee had called me, the woman playing Mrs. Robinson, and we were talking about ways we could maybe do some extra rehearsals. And she called me and she said, no, I'm not giving up my time because this asshole won't do his work. And I couldn't blame her. I absolutely couldn't blame her. I was like, okay, fine. So I made the call and I fired him and I stepped into the role of Benjamin. Benjamin is on stage for every single minute of that play except for about five.
And there's video of Dan walking back and forth across the stage wearing flippers.
Flippers. Yeah, there's the wetsuit. In the beginning of the play, he's actually in the
movie.
Yeah, but in the movie, the wetsuit comes about a third of the way through. The first scene of the show is the wetsuit. He opens in the wetsuit. And I stepped into the role. I'll never forget, Jerry lost his shit when I announced it to the cast, quietly, but I could tell he was losing his shit. I'm like, so we're going to rehearse. We're going to do it right now. And I, like I said, I've been working on the show for a couple years, so I knew the script, got on stage, knew the first scene cold, which had never happened, knew the first scene cold, walked off stage, and I hear, you know, the slow clap begin from Jerry. Like, I was like, that's the only time I've ever gotten the slow clap. I loved it.
I want to hear this story from the perspective of the guy who got fired. Some asshole fired me and put himself in the role, giant egomaniac douchebag.
But it was great because, like,
neither Ben in this story comes off looking like he deserves to talk.
It's the only time I've ever been on stage with my wife. It was lovely. So we did the show, and the show goes for 6 weeks. And I'm like, you know, we just had 6 week rehearsal process. We're gonna have our 9 week rehearsal process. We're gonna have 6 weeks of show, but at least I'll be with my wife during this entire thing. The next week, my artistic director calls me and says, hey, remember when we talked about you directing the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged? And I said I didn't think you were right for that show, and we brought in another director to do that show, because that was the show, not the next show, but the show after. And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, that director, he dropped out.
It's this kid named Ben.
It was actually this guy, Mike. He had some family issues, or something happened that he was unable to do the show.
Actually, at this time, this is when he was diagnosed with a medical condition.
Oh, is this one that happened?
Yeah.
He's still doing really well, so don't
no,
want to.
He's doing
great. He's doing great. He's a great guy too.
The condition, but I remember specifically that being the cause.
Okay,
he had just gotten the diagnosis, and when you get a diagnosis of a certain kind, you end up spending a lot more time at a doctor's office than you really want to be there.
Maybe that's it. And I think he went home to kind of deal with that, like away from San Diego. I don't know where home is. So I ended up talking to my wife, saying, "Hi, I just spend all this time directing a show, and Cabaret, which was the next show, is literally about to open in like 3 or 4 weeks, and Terry asked me to do this, and I've always wanted to." And Rihanna was like, same thing, well, fuck, you've always wanted to direct the show. There you go. So I did The Graduate, and 3 weeks after that, Cabaret opened, and that Monday we auditioned the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged. This story also brings in the Sweat and the Small Stuff host, Brian Evans.
Yes,
as well.
I want to complain about the story so far.
Okay.
This is supposed to be the secret origin of Musings of Geek, and I haven't been in the story yet.
You're about to be in the story.
I know, but that was like 10 minutes of not me.
I figured the story had to be going towards you because it wasn't going towards me.
And 10 minutes of not just Will.
So it's coming. Okay, so just to kind of give you the impression that I'd been spending a lot of time at Onstage Playhouse at this point. So I end up getting the opportunity to direct the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, which is a show where three guys do all of Shakespeare's plays in 90 minutes.
Which is a show that was also quasi precast.
Originally, yes.
But one of the people precast was the director who couldn't do the show.
Exactly. So, exactly. And
precasting went right out the window.
And one of the people who were precast in that show was Brian Evans, who once Mike was no longer directing, Brian no longer had a role. And I had worked with Brian about 6 years prior to that. We did the Rocky Horror Show together the first time, where he played Brad and I was sort of general tech guy, chorus guy, sort of assistant stage manager.
I picture Brian as Brad.
No, he shouldn't have been Brad. He should have been Frank in that show, and we rectified that.
I'm wondering if, he just was a different person back then.
No.
No, Brian, you're selling Brian short. Brian can do Brad like there's no tomorrow.
And he was great. He was an incredible Brad. I loved his Brad.
Not Brian specifically and not his acting, but pretty much every role Brian gets in community theater when he's the lead is Brad.
And he's amazing
at
it. Right?
Like he's Max in Tenor, or he's like, I mean, like he does that role a lot. So I don't think it was an intended slight that he became Brad. Probably one of those times where he would have been good as either role, but like it's almost a natural fit for Brian to play that kind of role.
I don't mean to sell him short. I'm sure he can pull off the role just fine, but I've seen him as
Frank,
and I know he can do that role.
And he's amazing.
And once
really
you've seen somebody do that role, it's hard to picture him doing the Brad role.
Yeah, no, and Brian, if you're in the San Diego area, Brian's actually in a show right now, and I know he's going to listen to this episode. He's actually in a show right now. Shit, I forgot the name of it. Corpse? It's up at PowPack, the Poway Performing Arts Company. I think it runs for probably a few more weeks once we post this. Go see that show just to see Brian. Brian is an incredible actor, and he's going to be amazing in this role, I think. So I would definitely recommend it.
Do we actually have listeners in the San Diego area?
I think we do.
Or are they all in Sweden?
No, they're not all in
Sweden. I thought it was Norway.
It's Norway, but
same kind of thing.
But definitely go see that. But
different flags, but...
But Brian actually showed up for auditions, and
They will go to war with you over that, my friend.
No, they won't. The Netherlands hasn't been to war for a long time.
Brian came to auditions. And I was really against casting him because he'd done the show before and I knew what he can bring, and I didn't quite know if I was going to be able to work with that situation. Not that I couldn't work with Brian, but the fact that there might be preconceived notions there. And so I was really not going to cast him.
Dan, let's put this in better terms so you don't sound quite so like you're being insulting.
But I'm trying not to
you
be insulting.
You were kind of afraid by casting Brian you'd get, to a degree, Mike's version of this show, which is what
exactly,
you didn't want.
Which is what I didn't
which
want.
Which is a perfectly natural response.
Yeah. However, Brian gave an amazing audition, and I realized I would be an idiot to not cast this guy, and I did. There was one other person who showed up to that audition who I had never met before and blew me away, and that man was Mr. Desmond Hassing.
Oh, you're selling the other people short, Dan. There was also that very nice gentleman who put on the fake Australian accent and walked on stage before doing a Shakespeare monologue for the complete works of William Shakespeare Bridge by going, "Would you mind very much if I took off my shoes?"
And Des was at that, like I said, Des was at that audition, and Des and I caught each other's eye, and I think in that moment I'm like, we're going to be friends, because this is fucking stupid, and Des understands that.
And then, for those of you who know Shakespeare, he did Puck while quasi-screaming at the audience.
It was awful.
It was a very aggressive Puck. Awful. It wasn't very playful at all.
It was
like Puck if Puck was Wolverine.
But did he capture the essential Australian-ish of William Shakespeare?
I like Puck as Wolverine. We gotta do that show.
I'm on. To be honest, Will, I didn't believe this story, but someone, who was it who saw him that we talked to later on, actually talked to him like during the audition.
I think it was Bob. Or it was B. It was either Bob or B.
And was like, yeah, he put that accent on for,
that's
his,
right,
for his slate. Like, he's not Australian.
I thought he was Australian. I'm like,
It's not like he went, okay, this is my Shakespeare accent because I'm doing Shakespeare. He put on an accent for the audition.
It was so weird.
Now I just kind of want to see Midsummer, where the guy playing Puck is just in a Wolverine outfit
the whole time,
and there's never an explanation.
Okay. We're going to do the Marvel Midsummer Night Stream.
We need to go into History of Bad Ideas for a moment. If we're doing Marvel Midsummer's Night Stream, I think you have to make Cyclops bottom.
All right, History of Bad Ideas, Draft Day, Midsummer Night's Dream, as the Avengers of the Marvel Universe, go. That's what I think
both
we should do.
Both the characters we talked about were X-Men.
No, it's okay.
They're not Avengers. Those are two different teams.
I know, but I'm saying Marvel Universe.
Fine.
X-Men, okay.
X-Men, guys. X-Men. Not
X-Men. All right, so my question to Des is, why did you audition for that show? I had never seen you at anything ever, and here you are showing up in my theater.
I love the complete works of William Shakespeare Bridge. I'm one of the few people in the world who actually saw it. On video.
I saw it when it was here.
No, I didn't see it live until after I did it. But I saw the video originally. I don't know. It seemed like an interesting show. And I was just getting done playing Polonius at school for...
Fortinbras, not Hamlet.
And I don't know. It seemed like the kind of show that would be fun to do.
Well, and I'm really glad you did, because you killed your audition, and I thought there's definitely a character that Des works for, because they're not like real characters. They're kind of caricatures of people. Like, there's like the crazy taco character, which it was Brian. So, I mean, you know, and then I ended up calling Nate, our friend Nate, Des's ex-roommate Nate, where Des met Nate. So we do the show, and the show opened in July, which meant Des was doing a show over Comic-Con dates. And we talked about going to Comic-Con, and you gave me your number and said, mm-hmm, text me, you know, we'll hook up. And I think it was that Friday I actually did text you. Now, yeah. And a little bit of backstory of what else was going on in my life at the time. So my wife has a very, very good friend today whose name we're not going to talk about today, who was dating this sort of salesman, alcoholic party guy who thought, I think to an extent she thought
she was dating Don Draper, but not as smooth and not as good looking.
Exactly.
And I think not as much fun to be around when drunk.
Yes, true story. Well, they'd gone through some rough times, and he'd gone on a sales trip, and they decided that they were going to talk about their relationship when they came back. And my wife's friend thought that this was going to be a good talk.
She thought that meant, okay, well, if we're going to talk about it, good things will happen.
Yes. So
and
she
what did the talking end up being?
She bought him his favorite bottle of scotch. And she made him a really nice dinner, and he came over right from the airport. He didn't even put his bags down, and he said, you know what? This isn't working. I don't love you. I've never loved you. I don't know what I've been doing for the last 2 years. I'm out.
And he also said, this scotch is a manipulation.
Oh, that's right. The scotch was a manipulation. That's right. And then he left.
It's
my favorite kind of manipulation.
He did not take the scotch with me, with him, which, with me. He didn't take the scotch
well,
with
him. That's fitting considering we drank the scotch.
We did. We drank the scotch. It was great. So because of that, because of this massive trauma that happened in my wife's friend's life, my wife's friend decided to hang out at my house every night for a month and a half. And at one point, right before Comic-Con, I had mentioned to my wife, you know, could maybe you and I have a night together? Which turned into the first epic argument of my marriage.
Yes, and if I recall, it was rather glorious. There was locking.
There was locking
in bathrooms.
Yeah, people. Oh, it was bad. Like, she picked up my computer to throw it, like it knocking off keys. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. I loved it. And so we go to Comic-Con, and I meet up with Dez. And Dez and I lose the group of people we were with, decide to go to Hooters. And at which point, as we're walking, I said, you know, I haven't spoken to my wife in 3 days.
Now, Dan, it's time to own up. Why is it that you did not talk to her for 3 days?
That wasn't the I hate you comment. That was a totally different fight.
Are you sure?
Totally different fight.
Okay.
That fight happened later. We just didn't talk for 3 days. And Dez made a comment. You were having your own woman problems at the time, if I remember correctly. Something with an ex-girlfriend did something, and it was just not good.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say about that. It ended up not being good. And so Dez and I bonded over beers at Hooters, at Comic-Con, over the women in our lives. And our friendship was solidified at that moment in time, which was kind of cool. It was like 7 years ago. Dez and I have been friends ever since. My wife and I had actually purchased our first house, the house we live in now, while we were doing Complete Works. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, double income, no kids, and we started throwing lots of parties, and Dez and I and Nate actually had a scotch night where we got obliterated on scotch in my backyard. It was Nate threw whiskey over my lawn because he got pissed off at the woman in his life at the time.
No excuse to throw
Nate,
whiskey.
Nate throws things a lot.
Yeah. Something had happened where she had told a story one way, and he didn't realize that the story was that she had told made him look really bad. And he was like, that didn't happen. And so we kind of told him, and he got really angry. So we started throwing parties, and I will never forget. There was a party, I think it was probably October or November. We're just kind of putting things together. You know, we're going to have the party on Saturday, and I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday. Rihanna's looking at Facebook, and I hear her say, "Holy shit, Billy Watkins!"
Oh.
I'm like, who's...
Now everyone's going to call you Billy.
Who's Billy Watkins?
We know how much you love
and
being called
you
Billy.
Were probably
you already do.
You were probably Will Watkins on Facebook at the time,
yes.
But she had known you as Billy.
Right.
From the time. And the reason, I'm like, who the fuck is Billy Watkins? Billy Watkins was my first boyfriend in seventh grade.
Yeah, it would have been eighth grade. But through eighth grade, it was Billy. I kind of grew out of the name.
Yeah, you did. But you did date my wife, as one can in junior high.
Yeah, and that's that sort of funny thing, right, where you use that term and you have to, like, put it in its proper context.
Yeah.
Because it's middle school.
Yeah, as one can when you're 13 years old.
Ditched, we had alternating lunches, like, at different periods, and she would ditch her class to come eat lunch with
us. Of course she would, because that's Rihanna.
That was about as interesting as that was.
But yeah, so and she's like, I'm gonna invite him to our party. I'm like, okay. And then I think you guys chatted and you told her you lived in El Centro. And I'm like, oh, he's not coming.
Right.
But you did.
Yes, I did.
And so
because that probably needs some background.
I'm sure it does.
So yeah, no, I think I had probably not been out there very long.
In El Centro?
Yeah. I had been looking for work and had decided to try and do the DA thing, and I didn't quite know how the San Diego system worked. I was just looking and I saw El Centro was hiring, which I didn't really want to do, but it seemed like, you know, it was only one county away, and
it's just a hop, skip, and a jump, and
it's
I don't
like
know.
A 90
only
minute
180
drive.
Miles
it was
down the freeway,
100 miles down the 8, and I went out and I did the interview, and they immediately offered me the job, and I was like, I don't know, and then eventually was like, well.
Well, it's good for your resume.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
A job is a job is a job.
At the time, I just
job.
Needed a job. And so I eventually, after a short time of commuting out there, eventually I had moved out there and was out there pretty much by myself with not a whole, I didn't know really anything.
No,
have a whole hell of a lot going on.
So basically, if you had gone out there sooner and had friends, you may not have come.
Yeah, and it was just one of those things where it's like, oh shit, I remember her. I've seen her maybe once or twice randomly. I ran into her like at the Cheesecake Factory when she was working.
And
there.
I think you guys hooked up one night at a party. You guys like, saw, not like hooked up, hooked no, up.
Right,
like you guys,
no,
yeah,
we had,
yeah.
Like, randomly run into each other a couple of times. Like, you know, I still finally remembered her from like middle school or whatever. So it was like she's throwing a party and like she mentioned you. She mentioned she got married and like, you know, wanted me to meet you. And it was one of those things where I was like, I got nothing else going on. What the fuck? Sure.
And so young William came out to the party. And by this point, my wife's good friend who had broken up and caused the first epic fight of our marriage started dating this other guy. This bro. I don't even remember what that guy's name was.
Definitely
his
name.
A bro. It was a bro, right?
I know his name.
He was definitely a bro who hated Dez for some reason. Guy hated Dez. Guy would mad dog. And at one point, Ed, who's been on Arkham and was on an episode of Musings of a Geek, like, we were going to get Ed on him. We were like, Ed, go fight that guy.
No, I think Ed.
And Ed.
Yeah, I know, but I think Ed wanted to. And Ed, you know, he seems like he'd be really easy to take, but, you know, he beats up gypsy kids, okay?
Yeah, I bet you Ed's got, like, a secretly powerful punch. Like, you just don't think it's coming because, like, how did I describe him earlier? Like, a buck 10 when wet? You think that this guy's got nothing. All of a sudden, he sucker punches you, and he probably knocks you right the fuck out.
He's pretty conservative. There might be a 38 wrapped around that
You never know.
You never know.
You never know with Ed.
Like, I would take Ed over me in a fight. I think, like, for some reason, I think it would go that way.
Well, yeah, Ed obviously would bite. So I mean.
And the reason it's important is because... my wife's friend and her new boyfriend, like, they were there. They were there last. Dez was still there. Will was still there because he was very drunk. And we decided we were going to watch Serenity.
Yeah.
We got about 3 minutes in and young William passed out on my couch.
I know that how that happened because you were talking to me when I was drunk. I had never heard of, I didn't know Firefly or Serenity. And you had one of those, like, you know, those moments when you meet somebody and you're like, how the fuck do you know X, Y, or Z? Like, what is wrong? How have you never seen Star Wars? You have that thing where you're like, and especially if you're drunk, where you have that enthusiasm, like, we're going to educate you right now.
Right now!
Definitely Dan's. I can't remember much else other than Dan having that attitude. you're watching.
Totally not unsurprising.
And I was in no fucking shape. Like, having gone back and watched that movie years later, I didn't remember a lick of it.
No, because you passed out.
It lasted about 8 minutes.
Yeah, and then the friend and the boyfriend left, and then Dez and I stood around for a while and went, okay, and then you left, and then Rihanna looked at me and said, what do I do with him? I'm like, give him a blanket. I'm like, what else are we going to do?
Yeah, these are all these parties of, like, people did not, like, just pass out in their house.
Yeah, ever.
Sleep. That was a weird thing. I didn't realize at the time, but yeah.
No, that never happened.
I got woken up in the morning by a text message.
Because William was still there, and so...
Oh, yeah, because I don't... my method for being hungover is just to sleep all day.
Yeah, I've seen you do it. I've seen you do it. And so we woke up in the morning, we got burritos, and we hung out for a bit, and then William went home, and I'm thinking I'm never going to see this guy again. And then I think we had a party like 2 weeks later, and Raina's like, should I invite Billy? I'm like, sure. And he came back.
Still had nothing going on.
And still had nothing going on. And then like a week and a half later, Dez had a party for Festivus, and he invited you, and you showed up again, and you just kept coming.
Yeah, I'm that person who just shows up. Like, if they're throwing like any sort of like work event, like the party, like, we're doing this thing on the weekend, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and you just kept showing up, and you there you were. And at the time, you were single. You had broken up with a girl who is now your wife.
Yeah, I was a bit of a hiatus.
Yeah, you were a bit of a hiatus.
They call this a break.
A break. Okay. And then, you know, about a year later, you guys had a reconciliation. And
I got to come back to San Diego.
Yeah.
And, actually, I think we were back together before that, but it made it much more convenient when I got to come back to San Diego.
Yeah, and then she started coming around, and then we started just... like hanging out more and more. Although I think what solidified my friendship with William was we were going to Vegas. You, me, and Ed, I think, was the first time the four of us went to Vegas. And I was just... What?
Wait, was Nate on that one?
No. Okay. I don't think it was. I think it was just you, me, and... I think it was Dez, Ed, and I were talking about going to Vegas. And I was like, I really want to invite a fourth person. And Rihanna said, you should invite Will. And I did. And again, you showed up!
That's like so sad.
Why?
Because that was like 3 years after we met him.
I know, but we
apparently you weren't solid, Will, for 3 years.
Yeah, well, you know, because the beginning of those first few years, it was just like whenever Dan happened to be throwing a party,
Will
in
would
his
show
backyard,
up.
Yard, mm-hmm. Things didn't actually start to become more regular until you guys started to like go to El Torito once
and
a week,
exactly.
Which then turned into Dart Night, which then turned into a podcast.
Yes, but there's a reason why that turned into a podcast.
Yeah, does that mean we're going backwards?
I'm sorry,
I think I skipped way ahead.
But
are we going backwards on the nerdy scale?
Maybe. Why?
To drinking at home, and then we went to drinking in public. Then we went to drinking and playing darts. Then we went to drinking and having a podcast.
Yeah, it went from really manly like scotch and darts to a geek podcast.
Yeah, that
this fell apart really quickly.
That's what happens. So Des and I started, because you know I want to see my friends, and I didn't have the kid at this point. So I Des and I started doing a lot more theater together. We both sat on the board of Onstage. We would produce each other's shows. We were very much involved in each other's shows. And then we just kind of said, hey, we're not doing a show. Do you want to go to El Torito on a Tuesday night or a Thursday night? And we just started going every week. It was either Por Favor in La Mesa, which is another city close by El Cajon where we live, or El Torito.
Yeah.
And then again, after Vegas, that first Vegas trip, we started inviting Will, and he kept coming, and it was just great. And so that turned into, well, let's try to save some money, and why don't we just, Randa said, why don't we just do it here?
Yeah, because El Torito's expensive to go to every week.
Yeah, and so we just started doing it at my house.
Not that I want to claim credit for the strength of our friendship, but I think that I started the weekly El Torito thing because I did a show with Mark, and I did a show with Jerry and a couple other people in a row, and they're people who like to rehearse on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm a big Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday guy.
Yeah, and so I always had Wednesday, and I think I was the one who started us going on Wednesdays.
Maybe, yeah.
This story makes me sound like a sad alcoholic.
But I'm glad that you're a sad alcoholic. No,
to do that, we have to explain why we really love you, Will. Now, you might be wondering, folks at home, why a man who comes to a party where he doesn't know a lot of people very well, gets really drunk, and goes to sleep on the couch for a long time, ends up being a friendship. And it's because what you don't know is that when Will gets really drunk, he turns the most amazingly adorable shade of abusive.
It really is. Oh, God, it is.
He just basically says horrible things about people.
But he's so cute.
But in such a lovable way. But it's hard to take him seriously.
This is true. And then we started like hanging out at Comic Cons together, and it's very, very true.
You were supposed to give him that look right there, like you didn't know what he was talking about.
Oh no, I absolutely know what he was talking about. There was the moment that there was a moment again at a party, and we were at, our friends Steven and Tiana came, mm-hmm. and you said something to me that was awful, and Tiana just thought you were the most wonderful person in the world because of the way you said it.
Mm-hmm. An abusive, sad alcoholic.
So
go for a walk. Yeah.
So over the course of the years going to Comic-Con, I always felt like I needed to do something more geeky. Like I needed to have another kind of geek nerd outlet, and so I started a blog, Musings of a Geek.
And I think you blogged exactly three times in 4 years.
It died. It just kept dying. And then I would go to Comic-Con again, and I'd want to do it, and I'd start it for a while, and then it died. And then started listening to Kevin Smith, and Kevin Smith started his little podcast thing. And Kevin Smith is great. He's the most, in my opinion, one of the most inspirational speakers in the world, because he's always just like, go do it. You can do anything. You were nothing, or as he puts it, you were once cum in your father's balls, and now you can do anything you want. And it's really inspirational.
Did you just... say all that?
I did.
Yes, you did.
I did. You know, it's Kevin Smith is a little inspirational, and I thought
you, as bad as Dan sounds right now, Will, I have to admit, you come out of almost any Kevin Smith Comic-Con Hall H panel with the belief that you can accomplish great things.
You can.
Even though Kevin Smith is lying his ass off.
You can accomplish great
when
things.
When Kevin Smith goes off about how, you know, he has no discernible talent business and he doesn't know anybody in the business. No, dude, you can write. If you couldn't write, people would not have gone and seen six or seven of your
exactly.
movies prior to Jersey Girl. Okay? They wouldn't have done that.
But after Jersey Girl, fuck you.
If the things you were writing were bad. Obviously, you're a talented writer and he doesn't give himself enough credit for that. But I think that's because he's trying to make a point rather than he actually believes it.
Which, you know, it's a definite possibility. But eventually I'm like, I could do a podcast. We should do a podcast. And I said,
yes,
we should do a podcast.
2.5 years passed.
No.
Yes.
No, because when it was
2.5 Comic-Cons before I simply started buying podcasting equipment.
And then we did it. So, you know, because Des and I talked about a couple shows we wanted to put up. And one of those actually ultimately became Arkham. I think, which was kind of cool.
Okay.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do for Musings of a Geek, and then it kind of turned into a topic show, which was totally fine. So we had Dez and I decided we were going to do a couple of podcasts, and we were going to do Musings of a Geek, which was the first one, which is the one you're listening to now, and then we added Pilots, which was a great ad, and a lot of people like it, and then
which turned out nothing like I intended.
But it's totally fine.
I wanted it to be very highbrow. Analysis of the writing and what makes the show work, and it's devolved into you trying to drunkenly tell people a plot for 40 minutes while Will and I make fun of you.
There's a man on a bus that's
on an island.
Oh, did the show change after that?
No, that's actually how the first one was.
You were on the first one.
It's just you've been around since the very beginning.
You were, no, aren't they all that one?
Yeah, but that wasn't what Dez wanted it to be originally.
No, I really did intend it to be something a little bit more highbrow than it turned out being.
So, and again, Dez and I decided we're going to do a podcast. Well, we're all get together. Why don't we just do a podcast? Will can come too, and Will came, and now he's on the podcast. That's every week.
And Will actually has logic for why he's on the podcast. Why are you on the podcast, Will?
Because I used to show up every week to play darts, and I didn't want to sit there doing nothing by myself for an hour while you guys podcasting waiting to play darts, so I figured I would just talk instead.
Oh, you used to have such a better answer.
He did.
Did I have a little more, like, inflection?
I come here to drink and talk. And now I come here and talk and you put a microphone in front of me.
Yes, yes. I used to sit here and bullshit with you people all the time anyway, and the only difference is now you stuck a microphone in front of me. And, you know, sure.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yes.
That's literally what happened. So we started doing Musings of a Geek every week, and then you added Arkham. You brought Gwen and Brandon in kind of to the family, which was great. Then we went through another Comic-Con. And the Smodcast Network, going back to Kevin Smith, who's a big inspiration for this. The Smodcast Network was are you calling your wife? Yeah, he's calling his wife. The Smodcast Network was actually...
Right, wait, it's time to start saying really bad stories about Will.
Aww.
Remember that time you did that thing?
He is the one calling his wife. I am not calling my wife. I mean, I will, just not right now.
His wife might actually listen to the podcast.
That's true. The Smodcast Network came up, and I kind of thought to myself, I'm like, how hard would it be to start a podcast network? I don't think it's going to be hard.
Apparently
at all.
Not that hard.
I don't think it's, I mean, I'm like, I could try it, and maybe a couple people will want to join up. So I basically took, because we were on Podbean and had a goofy little website that was a Podbean website, and I thought, well, how can I do this? What's the best way to do this? And what was really the driver, I think, was because we started talking about splitting the network feeds, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, I don't necessarily want to split the network feeds at this time, but maybe I can bring in other shows, and then maybe at some point we can split the network feeds. So I threw up the original version of musingsofageek.com, which literally just had Musings, Pilots, Arkham, Comic Arguments, which was another show we kind of did a few times.
Did we even have Arkham at this point?
Yeah, we did. We did. Okay. There was Arkham. And
if you say so. I mean, Arkham, I think we're on episode 30 or something. So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, we had Arkham at that point. Maybe episode 5.
Network was older, but okay.
No, Network started in April. So, yeah. So I threw it up there, and I just started Twitter blasting. Like, hey, podcasts, we have a geeky network. Check out musingsofageek.com. And the first people to join up were History of Bad Ideas, and then we got Green Up, and then we got Best of the Worst Movie Podcast, Dark Angels and Pretty Freaks, and it just started spiraling. And now here we are 5 months later, and I think we've got 20 some odd shows.
Let's not forget, we have a big announcement to make. As the premier Doctor Who podcast of San Diego, California.
That's right.
Is now joining the network in The Arrow of Time.
The Arrow of Time. It's actually up right now. The Arrow of Time podcast. It is a complete Doctor Who podcast. It's run by our friend Matt and some of his friends who I haven't met yet. But yeah, so that is the secret origin of Musings of a Geek. Meeting Dez at an audition, meeting Will by him just showing up at my house repeatedly, going to Vegas.
Listening to a fat man in a hockey jersey tell us we should record our thoughts as if people care.
And you know what? People in Norway seem to care.
Hey, I got no problem with the entirety of the Netherlands and the Scandinavian region. I'm fine with them.
Yeah, you know what? They're great. And I think
although I think Denmark is my favorite.
Although I think if Scotland would have broken off, I think Scandinavia would have tried to adopt them.
Yeah, no, I think is Denmark your favorite?
I don't know if I have a favorite.
Denmark is my favorite because of Gustav I and Gustav II.
What did Gustav I and Gustav II do?
Gustav I, I think it was in the 15th century. I may be wrong about the date. He tried to come south and free all the serfs.
Oh.
In general Europe. He made it into Germany, but like he wasn't able to hold a lot of stuff. And then Gustav II is probably my favorite monarch because during the occupation in World War II, he's the one who basically ordered the entirety of Denmark to wear the Jewish star.
Oh, so good guy.
The Nazis couldn't figure out who the Jews were.
Good for him. Good on him.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But yeah, so now we have a podcast network. And, you know, Des and I, this is maybe our fifth or sixth Vegas trip. We've What happened? What?
Someone was sniffing, judgingly.
Yeah, okay. What is this? I gotta throw this out there.
Yeah,
so,
seriously, what is with this Law and Order street?
So here we are in Las Vegas. William has driven up here, and I start smoking in the hotel room, which, you know, it's a non-smoking room.
It's a non-smoking room. You're breaking the rules.
I am breaking the rules. And William looks at me like, you can't do that in here. And then as we're walking out, we want to get extra cups, and there's extra cups on the housekeeping cart. William says, don't grab the cups. You can't do that. Where did this come from? Like, I don't even understand. Like, what is this?
It's a risk-reward analysis, right?
No, like, no, it's not. You know what it
but
is.
But you've never had a problem before.
Will.
Yeah. Did last time you were doing it, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is the story about the time that we came in. And the only reason I thought, we're definitely going to get away with this, is the fact that I'm pointing at the smoke detector for those at home, was hanging from the ceiling about a foot by a cord and wrapped in what looked like it had been a wet paper towel that had now dried around it. And I thought, well, bingo. Obviously, the last people were trying to get away with smoking. And now we have an obvious way to go down to the front desk and be like, hey, it's not us. And we're going to get out of this one. But I figure eventually it's going to bite you in the ass. And
as
the
long
upside
as-
of... having one more out of the, like, bajillion cigarettes he's going to smoke this weekend versus the risk of the ridiculous fee they charge you does not strike me as particularly worth
well,
it.
Well, first of all,
I'm
going to
be the responsible one.
The fee is not that ridiculous, Dan. You're a researcher. What's the fee?
$150.
That's pretty bad.
However,
it's 30 packs of cigarettes. That's what it is.
Explain to me the cups.
The cups?
Yeah, the cups. Okay, wait.
Oh, so no,
wait,
what happened
wait,
was...
Let me finish that. I'm going to let you finish. Okay, first of all, for those everybody out there, the smoking fee is the easiest fee in the world to get out of because nobody can prove that you did it.
Unless you yell it through the walls.
Well, yeah, but I'm...
Or, you know, record yourself saying you're doing it.
We're going to cut out which hotel we're at.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do that in post.
We're not.
Yeah,
you're insane.
No, the quick story on the cart.
I don't understand
and
the cups.
So the what do you call them? Not maid. Maid's probably not PC. What are they called?
Maid works. Maid's fine.
Okay.
Maid,
yeah. So
they're
the lady,
not stewardesses. Well.
Housekeeper or maid?
You're the hotel
flight
guy.
Attendant.
Maid's fine.
Okay. So the lady pushing all the supplies down the hallway.
Maid works.
So, we get into the room, and we realize there's, like, one nice glass, which Dan immediately turned into an ashtray, and there's, like, two shitty styrofoam cups in the bathroom. We realize we cannot, you know, start pre-drinking in the room with this particular setup, so we need more cups. And as we are deciding we're going to head out to the convenience store to go find supplies, including cups, we walk past the cart, the unattended supply cart with all the towels and everything on it, and there is a stack of more shitty styrofoam cups right there, and they give me this look like, we can just take a stack
We can just take a stack
that,
of cups!
Which my initial instinct is like, no, you can't do that! You can't just grab things off of the cart!
You
like
absolutely
that.
Can! And if the housekeeper comes out, you go, can I have some cups? And they will go,
yes,
oh, yes, okay!
If the person had been there and you'd be like, can you have these? And she'd be like, yeah, and I'd be like, okay, that's cool. But it just strikes me as weird to just start grabbing things off of the cart. Plus, I'm also accounting for the fact that I don't want those cups.
You want other cups.
There are these teeny little shitty styrofoam cups, and I want a real one.
No, fair enough. And did you get a real cup?
I mean, it's a paper cup, though, but it's at least, like, it's human-sized, and it's not, like, little kid-sized.
Fair enough. Fair
it's
enough.
Not, it's not Baby Jeffrey-sized?
Baby exactly. Jeffrey. So, I mean...
Baby Seamus.
At the end of the day, that is the secret origin of how Dan, Des, and Will got together to be on this podcast and have a podcast network. So, there you go. Cool. We have questions from the universe.
Goody.
All right. The first question from the universe is actually coming from, this is for Just Will, coming from Neil from Dark Angels and Pretty Freaks. And he wanted to know if we had a road trip soundtrack. And we kind of did.
Yeah.
But, like, do you have, like, a special road trip soundtrack you put in, or is it just your music?
Random play, disc by disc.
No, there's a system to this. I did it the last time we came here, too. So I live in the Stone Ages. I drive a car back before they had iPod jacks in them, and I've been driving it around for a very long time now. And so I still have, like, from back in the 90s, the CD case, and I, like, will burn, play, like, your random iTunes playlist. I turn mine into burned CDs and drive around with them until I get sick of them.
Fair enough.
Except that when I'm coming out to Vegas, I now have to account for... the fact that Dez is a critic, and that Dan is prone to you know, we have a certain overlapping.
Yeah, we do. We do a
not,
taste.
It's not complete, but
we
have
overlap.
A overlap.
Yes. Yeah.
And so,
hey, I take some offense to that critic comment. Just because I tell you your music is stupid doesn't mean I make you turn it off.
You're being curmudgeon-y.
So basically, I figured, okay, I can design something here that will run for 12 hours. I can burn 10 discs worth of music that will last for an entire set of road trips. I just have to figure out, what do I like? How can I appease Dan by throwing on, like, I don't know, 20% Decemberist song?
Oh, and it worked.
And
thank you.
What will cause Dez
to complain the least?
I don't give you looks.
No, it's not looks. They're out loud comments.
Not even out loud comments. I will admit, there, like, you had a Monsters and Men song that I would normally give you shit about. Because it's been way overplayed. But
that's true.
Pretty toxic. It has been. But it's a good song.
Before I have that comment, most of the time, because I'm actually much nicer than you, than my brain wants me to be. I know it's frightening, but it's true. I remind myself that you never listen to the radio.
No.
So sometimes
really.
You don't know something's been overplayed to death.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember once I found a song that I thought, like, this is really good. Like, why isn't this all over the radio? And then 2 months later, it was Ho Hey by the Lumineers.
Oh,
and it
geez.
Was on every
everywhere.
Radio station in America every 5 minutes.
That's what I feel about Churches. I found Churches way a long time ago. They had their EP with The Mother We Shared and a few other songs. I'm right. Like, this is brilliant. Why is this not on the radio? And then The Mother We Shared was everywhere.
It's because they're... That song, not their album.
Their album is really good.
Is a novelty song.
Their album is amazing.
It's just like Taylor Swift.
I can't listen to them, but
we will never, ever, ever get back together. I mean, like when they're too much about a single hook,
really,
you get sick of them.
280s.
Really,
I like the 80s vibe. I like the 80s vibe.
But yeah, the hipster part of me went like, you know, when nobody knew about the song, I thought it was okay, and now that it's everywhere, I kind of hate it.
I will admit, I do give you two shit for things like the fact that I will not hear any Band of Horses anymore, because now that other people know who Band of Horses are, you two think they're lame.
No, I think
I don't think no. There, yeah,
really
I agree.
The last one was
I totally agree. I like the first Band of Horses album. And then their quality starts to go down.
Yeah,
I
my take on the Band of Horses is that they're like Echo and the Bunnymen. I like all of their songs the first time I hear them, and then anytime I hear them the second time, I'm like, this is the stupidest music ever recorded.
Fair enough. I overpoured.
Really? I'm so shocked. The podcast should just change the name to Getting Drunk with Dan.
Getting Drunk with Dan. That's what we do. Yeah. We're in Vegas, though. We're having a good time. All right. The next one comes from Jeffrey Charles at The Luggage, who gave us the antioxidant question that Brian Evans answered on the Musings of a Geek website.
I got it wrong, despite the fact that I just read the Wikipedia.
You didn't
article.
Get it wrong.
You
it
know
was,
Wikipedia is sometimes
okay, hold on.
Wrong.
Well, yeah,
you
but...
You know, I refuse to believe that.
I'm gonna
start changing Wikipedia entries you need for your job, Will,
all right.
And I'm going to have you going for another...
Brian actually commented on that, I feel. So let's see if I can find what he wrote on the Sweat and the Small Stuff page. I don't think he said you were wrong.
Wasn't my first answer that it was the opposite of oxidation?
Yes.
Or something like that? The opposite of an oxidant?
Yes.
Okay, so this is what Brian said. This first paragraph is, so on episode 65 of Musings of a Geek, a question from the universe was asked, what is an oxidant and why should we be against them? And alas, the wonderful world of dictionary definitions that aren't really that helpful came up with An oxidant is a substance that oxidizes. Now, the boys eventually discovered some more helpful information, but this in this mini small stuff post, we discuss what's actually going on.
Okay, so I gave the comedic, because I looked it up, and I thought that it was like, you know, it's not comedy gold, it's like comedy copper, that like the answer was that bad. That was the first answer I found on the internet, was that it was something that oxidizes.
So
I had to say it.
So basically, for this question of the universe from Jeff, it is, we all know that the moon affects the Earth's tides, but he wants to know how and why.
Oh, I kind of know that one.
I think we can answer that. And again, if we get it wrong, feel free.
I think maybe you need to stress to people that there's supposed to be questions from the universe, not questions
about the universe.
Of the universe.
Hey, I always say, ask us anything and we'll give you a shout out.
The simple explanation is that the moon has a gravity well, which, while not sufficient to break away from the Earth, is sufficient to affect the Earth. And especially a porous kind of thing like the water, which doesn't have a specifically... The water doesn't have a great deal of density.
Okay,
it has less density than you or I.
You're my density. I mean my destiny. William's thinking.
I'm trying to remember if I remember the any of the technical language, and I think the answer is no. But it is actually the same phenomenon that causes the rings around Saturn and a bunch of volcanoes to go off on one.
Did
of
you say
moons.
The same technology?
No, did I say technology? No.
No.
The same phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
That causes massive volcanic eruptions on one of those moons that I want to say is around Jupiter.
Yeah, I think it's Titan you're thinking of.
Io, maybe. One of those. I don't remember. But basically the idea is that the... like especially with the Saturn one, it's this huge planet, right? And so all of these little rocks ended up floating around it. It's causing this massive gravitational pull on them that will actually, like if you thought of a regular moon around it, is pulling on it so hard that it's taking what you would normally think of as a sphere and actually like warping it. If you
and turning it into like a parabola almost.
Yeah,
it's more like an ellipse,
but like not that extreme. But it's subtly warping it back and forth just from the massive gravitational pull. What it does with the smaller things around Saturn was it crushed them all into the rings that you see around it. And with the volcanoes, it's because it's causing the moon around it so hard that it's causing the, what would you call it?
Lava?
Magma?
No,
not the actual stuff in
okay.
it, but the process. It's causing a lot of, God damn it, whatever the word is, that causes it the turbulence. Whatever it would be that's causing all of the problem. God damn it. Anyway, so I'm only like two drinks in. This is ridiculous. The same thing happens on a smaller scale. Obviously, those are big planets versus either moons or smaller rocks or what have you. But the moon has its own pull on the Earth. The same
yeah.
way we have a pull
on
the
moon.
And that pull causes that sort of small disturbances or what
I
have
think
you.
The word you're looking for is distortion.
Distortion, what have you, that actually causes a little bit of warping on the Earth, and that ultimately causes
the tides
and the waves.
Checkmate atheists.
Had there not been a moon around the Earth, you would not have waves.
That's probably very true. In fact, I think that's actually 100% true. Good job, William.
Unless the sun would... never mind.
No, not that. The sun's too far. Excellent. Excellent.
No, I don't think the sun at this level exerts enough of a force to cause...
Check an astronomy webpage, fuckers. I don't know.
You would have a placid... No, there's some really good sites out there for looking at things like exotheory and stuff like that. Like,
it's the gravitational pull of the moon.
Yes, it's the gravitational pull of the moon.
The gravitational pull of the moon. He wants to know why the gravitational pull of the moon operates the way it does.
Because the moon
My
is rather large.
My answer is as follows. I do not have a PhD in astrophysics.
I don't know if you need a PhD.
Apparently you haven't set your mind to it.
No, I can't handle the math. You could probably handle the math, but you don't have the interest in the subject.
I took astronomy in community college.
That doesn't mean you have the interest in the subject.
Fair enough.
Would you like to talk about geology? I could probably talk about geology. There's no math in geology.
Rocks are minerals.
I'm almost positive there's got to be some math in geology.
No, not really.
Carbon dating.
Yeah, but that's carbon dating. You're not doing any math to do that. All you do is all that
math
is,
and carbon dating.
How is there math in carbon dating?
Well, you've got to figure out the isotopes and then the half-life
yes,
of the isotopes
they're...
divided by, I don't know.
Yes, you're
Can you
right.
Tell we're all liberal arts majors?
You're right in the fact.
I am not a liberal arts major. I am a business major.
Yeah, he's an accountant.
I'm an accountant. Okay. Because accountants don't do math. Accountants do not do math. I keep telling you guys this. Yeah, clear. Fuck you. Accountants do not do math. Accountants are good at puzzles.
Dan's right. There is a bare minimum of math in radiocarbon dating.
I have a calculator. I don't need to do math.
Take the level of radiocarbon in the object minus the decay rate to determine how much time has passed since that mineral was formed.
Fair enough.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Are we? Did we answer that?
I think so.
Are we good? All right. The last question comes from my good friend Andrew at Drew Rog, DrewRog on Twitter. And if you've been following Musings of a Geek Twitter today, I have been live tweeting our kind of trip up north to Vegas. And at one point, Dez made a comment that he knows that the largest dildo factory is in San Diego. And I happened to tweet that.
No, I said the largest dildo factory in California is in San Diego. I didn't say that it was in the whole world.
And California is in San
Diego. There might be a humongous one in Bangkok I don't know about.
So, Andrew, my good friend Andrew, wanted to know why you were even interested in a dildo factory.
Ironically enough, a man I did a show with.
Okay, wait, stop right there.
A play. Wow. Called The Miser.
Fair enough.
For those of you who are drunk and perverts, like my friends. And he was working at the time at a factory that makes a great many dildos. And at that time, he was very happy because he had been taken off of dildo duty. And what he was doing instead was he was making rubber kind of replacement guns.
Fair enough.
For the U.S. military for them to use in training operations. Like, I don't know when they use
them. So the idea being that you can mold anything.
Out of rubber, yeah.
Out of rubber.
For various different kinds of uses.
And in one factory, they mold rubber for the military and for dildos. Oh, yeah.
Which maybe the military also
I'm sure. I'm sure
the dildos are probably much more profitable.
Oh, I guarantee you they're much more profitable.
Let's break this down. Will, what do you think the average dildo cost?
Cost? As opposed to the median price?
Yeah.
Cost to make, not cost to buy.
Oh,
like,
cost to make.
Like, what's the cost? What's the cost of goods sold on a dildo?
Dildos, not vibrators, so we don't have that many complex parts here.
No, just
making a mold.
A big rubber
cost
cock.
Of goods sold on a rubber cock.
We're talking just rubber here, not like a fancy one or a glass one.
No,
or,
not a glass one.
Just a rubber cock.
Oh, very little.
Like, oh, yeah.
75 cents?
75 cents.
And what do you think the average cost is? Dan, you've got the internet.
Average cost of a dildo.
Oh, I bet dildos are cheaper than that. I'd be willing to bet they're probably like $14.99 at the most.
Your search history is going to be amazing.
Your wife's going to look at your laptop and go, what?
Average cost of a dildo. Let's see what it comes up with. Amazon bestsellers, best dildos. Yahoo Answers, how much on average does a dildo cost? We hit the hard-hitting topics here in Musings of a Geek.
This is a great contrast to the last one, which, by the way, if I can go back, I have a feeling
our Norwegian contingent wants to know.
People, I think, are just submitting science questions to find out if by the end of the show any of us can even talk enough.
That's really unfair. I'm usually not drunk.
All right, here we go. On the Yahoo Answers, someone with the name of Phil answered, a dildo can cost as little
I know Phil. He's reputable.
As a little as a few dollars for a cheap version, but you get what you pay for, and better quality dildos that have that realistic feel are available for around $30 to $50. So if we say $40 for an average dildo cost.
I think that doesn't sound like an average dildo to me, Dan. That sounds like a single woman who's been single for a few years and really wants a quality dildo price right there.
All
right,
so if we're going to say a dollar. If a dildo costs a dollar to make, and
I'd be
it costs $40,
cost around $12.
Oh, this sounds like a pure profit industry.
$40 to buy on average for a good one. $40 to buy on average for a good one. You're looking at a 97.5% profit margin.
I'm in the wrong business.
A 97.5% gross profit margin. You're not talking about profit margin itself. Gross profit margin is just revenue minus cost of goods sold, and then the rest of it is your overhead. But I mean, you figure even your overhead, you're splitting that over the cost of a whole factory.
Yeah,
making 80% profit margin on a dildo
with overhead. I'd say a dildo.
I just did that math.
$3, $4.
I don't know whether to title this episode Dildo Economics or Abusive Alcoholic Puppy. I feel like it's a toss-up.
We might call it both, Abusive Alcoholic Puppy or Dildo Economics.
Oh, I learned to stop worrying and love.
I'm thinking there's probably after all of your overhead.
This is what you fuckers roped me into. I'm having like an existential moment right now.
He actually is. He's got his feet up on the table. His hand is like on his forehead. This is great.
You ever stop and you're like, how did I get here?
you broke the podcast.
Oh, God, you broke the podcast. I'm saying it right now. After you overhead 80% profit margin on a dildo.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So Supply and demand, market curve. I don't know. Whatever.
Who was it who asked this question? Chambers?
Andrew. This is Andy.
Andy, the answer to your question is start manufacturing dildos.
There you
go. This is my new favorite segment of the show.
Questions from the universe or the dildo?
The weird science question that gets coupled with some like just batshit crazy question, and you know.
I love the fact that we figured it out. I'm looking at a 97.5% gross profit margin on a dildo. We're all in the wrong business.
Yeah, but isn't like how would you differentiate yourself in the dildo market?
You don't.
No, because anything you do to differentiate yourself cuts into your overhead, right?
Dildos.
No, I was thinking more in terms of like if I was going to manufacture a dildo and I was trying to corner the market.
Like just on your own? Like,
no, I mean as a company.
Okay.
And I was trying to corner the market and I'd never made dildos before. I got two options really, right? I can just go for the floor, right, and just make a standard dildo and just have no bells and whistles and things like that and hope that people buy mine because it's slightly cheaper than someone else's.
I'm picturing an actual dildo with a bell and a whistle.
Or I can go out and I can find someone who...
And can you make them cheaper in China?
Of course you can.
No, you can't.
What?
It probably costs more to ship the weight of the dildo from China than you'd save in making it in China.
So basically dildos are made in America industry.
Yeah, basically. If you buy a dildo in America, it's probably American made.
This discussion is quickly sounding like that last episode of Silicon Valley. Which, by the way, if folks at home, if you haven't watched Silicon Valley...
Watch it.
It's only 8 episodes,
and they're
only
half
like a half hour
just
long.
So do it.
And if you want to just skip to the last episode, you can do that.
Megan M. answered that she'd recently bought a fairly plain one. It was 6.5 inches, silicone, and vibrates. That was $50. So,
that might be a top end.
That's a vibrator.
That's a vibrating dildo. One thing I'm sure of, Dan, is if we're going to go into the dildo manufacturing business, we probably shouldn't start with vibrating dildos.
No.
That's beyond this crew here.
No. I say if you're going to go for it, go for the luxury, you know, level.
No, I agree with that. But I want to go back to the point of, like, the only other way I can think you could corner the market is by taking someone to model the dildo on. Who like would give you the name?
Oh, you
want to
do like the star thing, where like that person who takes the casts of famous people's penises?
Yeah,
and,
exactly. But by doing that, you're really cutting into your overhead because you got to pay that person.
But I don't know if she paid them or if she was just really good friends with them.
Maybe. And depending on
was one of them Robert Downey Jr. because I can see him doing that.
I remember there was a story about a lady who actually had like she just had it as an art exhibit or something like that, but she actually went out of her way to get casts of like famous people. Like she had Jimi Hendrix.
Mm. Wow.
That's a good get.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if you can actually market very specific people, that might be something.
Yeah. Well, I imagine not that I go to a sex store all that often. I go to the Crypt every once in a while. But frankly speaking, I don't end up in the dildo section because there's much more interesting things to look at the Crypt. There's like weird polyurethane paddle things that you just kind of go like, I don't know how this works.
I can't remember the last time I went into a sex store.
Well, is the Crypt a sex store? I go into the Crypt somewhat regularly because the Crypt has the best selection of gay-themed sex-based birthday cards in the world.
I'm really glad you qualified that with birthday cards.
No, I'm serious.
You were like, oh my God, this is about to be the craziest statement on the show ever.
Des is going to come out? It come out of left field. No. Baby. Okay, good.
No, I've got a lot of gay friends. I buy them birthday cards. They're kind of like Far Side cards for the homosexual lifestyle. And the only place I've ever found them is the Crypt. I'm sure like F Street or your major sex stores probably have
F Street is a sex store in San Diego.
It's just, well, I'm sure F Street's probably exist outside of San Diego too. They've got a bunch of stores.
Which has numerous stores, none of which are on F Street.
None of them are on F Street.
But because of that, they always have those up front. So I go to the Crypt maybe once every year or so. I buy a couple. And then I can give them to my gay friends.
No, that's a good idea.
The ones that are inclined to take a funny sex Far Side card. I don't give them like all my gay friends like by default you must like this card because it's gay themed.
That's very stereotypical of you, like you are gay,
you must like this card. I don't do that. I have varying levels of gay friends. Some are more conservative than others, but I imagine there's probably one that's like Ron Jeremy. like
a card. Oh no, no,
a
penis cast, a dildo cast of Ron Jeremy. Yes, I'm like, what are we talking about? Yes,
really famous porn star, right?
Yes.
But I just imagine that doing that must really cut into the overhead because you got to pay those people a ton of money.
Ron Jeremy, James Dean. That's what I'm thinking is going on there.
You know what bothers me the most about this conversation?
What's that?
Is we're talking about porn and porn actors, and I can come up with Ron Jeremy, who's famous for being a porn actor outside of the porn community, and yeah. Dan knows an actual porn actor.
The girls love James
How
Dean.
How much porn do you watch?
A lot. The girls love James Dean. I don't watch much porn anymore.
Is it a requisite of being married that you just start watching lots of porn?
No,
Dan?
I don't watch.
What responds?
No comment.
Is it just Dan? Or is it all married men?
I heard this this story once. I assume it's an urban legend about a university that wanted to run a research project, and they had to get a test group of men who watch porn, and they needed a control group of guys who didn't watch porn and were unable to conduct the experiment because they couldn't find a guy who does it.
Yeah.
Oh, I can find you a control group. They're 10-year-olds.
They're 10-year-olds or priests.
Kids are growing up so fast these days. I don't know about that.
No, I'll imagine there's still a lot of 10-year-olds that don't watch porn because they just haven't hit puberty yet. They don't really know why they should watch
it. Still watching Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah. That's a thing. I don't even know if that's a thing. Is Yu-Gi-Oh still a thing?
I have no idea.
I have no idea. All right. Are we good?
I think so.
Dildo Economics, The Tides of the Moon, and Will's Playlist. That was this week's Questions of the Universe, and I think we're actually done with this week's podcast. So we're going to go play some Blackjack. What do you think? Blackjack?
Yeah.
Yeah, Blackjack. Blackjack?
No, I instead I
Dad, want you to play some craps.
I want to play that game that has the dollar on the wheel.
Oh, that is the shittiest bet in a casino.
No, I know. It's Pharaoh, right? It's Pharaoh with the wheel, but I'm just joking.
Fair enough. Everybody, thank you for listening to this week's Secret Origin episode of Musings of a Geek, which is now going to have a completely different title, I think. And yeah, are we good? We're good. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening and stay geeky, my friends.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.